Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Max Morrissey.
And you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. And you can get in touch with the show by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone to the studio on 776 2777, or email at any stage kitchengarden@ckc.ie. If you're listening to the repeated show on Monday afternoon, don't bother texting us as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us. Another busy show this week, and this week we'll be talking all about cheese. We'll chat shortly with Stephen Lamb from River Cottage about his new book on cheese and dairy, and we're also going to be talking to Bree DeMar from Killini.com, Killini Cheese in Tipperary. Mags, how are you? And how was your week?
Another busy week. Someday I'm going to come in and say no, it wasn't so busy, but it was actually. Swallows arrived, so that was good last week. Nice to see them, but I actually don't think they've all arrived. I think there's just a few. So maybe some of them are a bit slower. They've taken a slower route or something. I wouldn't blame them.
Yeah, well, there's not very much to welcome them when they get here, is there?
No.
It was a miserable start to the week. It's picked up a bit. I wonder, is this the actual spring that we've been expecting? We've had a couple of false starts already, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Just when you think it's turning.
Just
to dry out and the sun comes out for a few hours and then it's off again.
I had to lock the poor last of the lambs in the barn again at the start of the week, Monday and Tuesday, because of all of the rain. And I had a ewe, my last ewe, lambed with triplets. Yes, absolutely. And it brought the average number of all of the animals, or all of the lambs, to two. So every ewe had two lambs on average. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Yeah, brilliant.
One of them's the smallest.
Yeah, he's very small, and that's why I was kind of afraid he'd get left behind. Now, he's got a full belly and stuff, so that's all working out well. But every now and again, if she got spooked, or the other two would run off after her, and he was kind of like, you know, hobbling along behind, and then trying it with other ewes, and they were having absolutely none of it, of course. And compared, it's amazing. There's only 10 days, I think, is it? Or maybe 2 weeks between him and the first. And the first lamb that was born was a single, and it's a giant compared to him. Like, he could nearly...
I was always given the pet lamb or the smallest of the triplets when I was a kid and stuff, so I would have had a selection of pet lambs over the years. So I have a particular fondness for triplets, actually. The minute I saw triplets arriving, I was kind of going, I'll get one of those. So
well, if things don't work out, I'll keep you in mind with this lad, and I might get you over to do some bottle feeding or something like that.
Yeah, we're very good at that, actually.
Well, I suppose when you grow up on a sheep farm or on a farm where there are sheep, you will get a job. Like, you'll be given a job.
Oh, I actually was. I would have looked after the sheep. I would have known every single one of them, and there were quite a few of them. So yeah, it was my thing actually as a kid. I was very fond of the sheep. I was well able to lamb even as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old. I was able to lamb. I'd be sent out even at midnight, and
And did you get any of the income then from the lambs?
No, I think I got sent to college. That was probably my my reward.
Okay. So you had a busy week. Food-wise, what were you up to?
Food-wise, I had a very fancy dinner actually on Saturday night.
Oh.
16 people at it. And it was all, sorry to go on about Tipperary and stuff, but it was all Tipperary food. So pretty much everything came locally. There was even ricotta cheese in one of the courses that was made on a farm. And we had five courses of absolutely beautiful food. The lamb was probably my favourite. It was neck and shoulder of lamb, slow cooked, that I've never had before actually. It came out looking a little bit like a rack of lamb, but it wasn't. And beautiful greens, beautiful sauces, everything was beautiful. And it was all foodie people. So conversation in the beginning of the evening was all about food and this sort of thing. By the end of the evening, it was about all sorts of things. It really did descend into good crack, actually.
And was that over in Tipperary?
Yeah, it was.
And it was organised by a local food circle or something?
Friends. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Excellent. But, good kind of mix and gather of people, which was nice, actually.
Lovely.
But our final cheese course was a great big board of Killini cheese, actually.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and one of them is a cheese they make that's washed with White Gypsy, which is a Tipperary beer, White Gypsy beer, and that's really delicious.
Well, we could talk to Breda about that in a little while. So not to sound like I'm trying to detract from your lovely dinner in Tipperary or anything like that, but I've had some very nice meals over the last few days as well, because I'm just back, well, I'm back a few days now, from sunny Lyon in
very
France.
Nice.
It was very, very nice. I was over there to do a wine tasting course, and of course, when in Lyon, you have to do as the Lyonnais do.
It sounded like it was work.
It was all work. It was all work, start to finish. A struggle.
Nobody believes you, you know that.
So long as revenue do, that's all that matters.
So
we went to sample some of the local wine, and Lyon is a really interesting place actually, because its kind of cuisine is very much the stuff that we talk about in here an awful lot. So they're very much from tail to snout in terms of using up the meat on the animals that they have there, and their traditional restaurants are called bouchons. And in the various bouchons, you'll get these typical dishes, which include things like tripe sausage. And they even braise a donkey's snout, which now I didn't myself to try that one. No, they were sold out. But there are lots of other kind of lesser cuts, as we'd say, in the bouchon.
Nice.
Now, on the last night we were there, we couldn't wait to go to a fish restaurant and just have something really, really light and fresh.
After. So it's a lot of meaty.
Very meaty, Tim. Very, very meaty cuisine. And lots of sausage. Kind of Italian, actually, in a lot of respects.
It's not that far from...
Yeah.
It's not really,
well, you could see the Alps. You could see the Alps from, from the town. So you climb up the hill to the old part of town and there's the Alps. And it was the Romans' headquarters in Gaul. And, you know, so a lot of connections with Italy. So I suppose that's not surprising. But really, really interesting place and a lovely city to visit. So that was my work last week.
You're going to still call it work.
I'm not going to give up on that. Now, while I was away, finally started to see some blossoms on the cherry trees. But for the very first time, the leaves came out before the blossoms on the ornamental cherries. And I'm starting to wonder whether I'll get much of a display this year at all.
I don't think we're going to. I think like the daffodils were quite disappointing this year. I think everything, like, it has an effect. Weather has a huge effect. So I have a cherry tree as well that the leaves are starting to come out on. And even there's another one that there are some flowers on, but they just don't have the same impact. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, really, you know, because I love the display on the ornamental cherry.
Everybody does, I think. Yeah.
Now, there was plenty of cherry blossom in Lyon, but we've moved on from that.
Lyon.
Now. I probably won't mention that again, but it was absolutely lovely. But there have been some other things in season, and you've got a jar of pesto in front of you there.
I do. Well, between the heavy showers, we made a run for it yesterday or at the weekend, and picked. I had a grumpy boy, so I had to take him somewhere. So we picked a pile of wild garlic down near the river, and one of the other boys then made pesto, which was his first time making pesto, and he was quite amazed at how easy it was. I think he thought it was going to be some kind of a complicated process, but it was it's very easy. So and it's a mad green colour, isn't it?
It is fabulous. We'll get a photograph of that actually, and we'll tweet that with a notification of the podcast on Twitter. That's
There's
really,
a spoon
really
there
lovely.
If you'd like to
Good
try.
Stuff.
So all it is the wild garlic leaves, a clove of garlic, olive oil, pine nuts, pepper and salt, and Parmesan cheese added in at the end. I'm not a huge pesto fan, to be honest, but the kids love it. They all took chicken and pesto sandwiches to school today with various other bits and pieces in it. So
Oh, that is really, really lovely.
Yeah.
But that'd be really nice on bruschetta, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of a gorgeous pesto I had while I was in Lyon recently.
Oh my god!
sorry.
I suppose you had cheese as well, did you?
There was one or two cheeses to be had. Yeah, fromage, as we like to call it in Lyon.
We are fresh now. Oh my god! How long are we there?
It was work. I was trying to fit in. So tell me, how did the boys? What was the process involved in making the pesto?
Gather the leaves.
Mm. So tasty.
Liquidizer or food processor with olive oil, pine nuts, and a garlic clove, and just blend it all up. kind of put in as much olive oil as, you know, until you get the texture right, and then you're going to grate your Parmesan and add it in at the very end. You can freeze it, but it's better to freeze it before you add the Parmesan. So freeze it and then keep the Parmesan for when you defrost it, add it in at that stage. I put in the Parmesan, well, Tom put in the Parmesan, and I kind of just, we kept checking the taste and then decided when we'd enough Parmesan in. That's to taste, really. You could put more into that one, actually.
Excellent. And the lads made that themselves?
They did, yes, with my assistance.
Great. Now, we better take an ad break, because coming up after the ads, we're going to be on the phone to the UK, and we're going to talk to Stephen Lamb from River Cottage about their new book, Cheese and Dairy, which Stephen has pulled together, which isn't just about British cheeses or a kind of directory of British cheeses. It's about everything that's involved in making cheese. So we'll be back just after these.
Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And thanks to those who have contacted the show. We'll get to some of those messages in a little while. Remember, we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, so you can send in any questions or comments by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777 or email kitchengarden@corkc.ie at any stage. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text us, as we won't get to see your messages, but you can still email, and that address again is kitchengarden@corkc.ie. Now, I am absolutely delighted to be joined on the phone now by my old buddy Stephen Lamb from River Cottage fame in the UK. Delighted to have you, Stephen. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, and shame it can't be in person. But this'll do.
Well, the next time you're over, we'll definitely have you in the studio.
Well, that'd be grand. It's like talking to friends across the garden fence.
It's like that TV show, though, where the garden fence is kind of high, so we don't really see much of each other.
I see. And am I kept on one side and you're on the other?
Yeah, we'll miss you when you leave, but we're not going to talk about Brexit today.
No, we're not.
Stephen, you've been involved with River Cottage now for quite a long time, haven't you?
I have, since the beginning, really, Francis, and about 18 years in total, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Kind of got involved on the TV side originally, and then it was just right time, right place, and was given the freedom to get involved in the events. And of course, it's all around food, and we're surrounded by brilliant food producers and amazing teachers, really, people who are really into the food movement. And it kind of became just a way of life, very fortunate.
And a way of life really is the best way to describe the whole River Cottage ethos and what it is that you teach down there at the HQ on the Devon-Dorset border. It's about a lifestyle, really, and choices that you make to that impact on your life.
Very much so. Impact on other people's lives too. And it was never anything that was going to be on my radar, but it was something that I just couldn't get enough of, and I still feel now today that it's a place that encourages enjoyment of the whole food process, and it is a very generously spirited place, because ultimately, if you make the right choices as a consumer, or if you make the right choices about what you grow and where it's from and the seasonality, then it's not just about you, it's about a community, and you kind of tap into that community, and it just makes it very vibrant. A job is a difficult, you know, it's not even a job for me, really. It's more of a made-up job, but it's something that I live, you know, 24 hours a day, because it has a resonance both for me and my family, and my enjoyment of my day-to-day life, but also, you know, you carry on learning.
And there was a time when you actually lived at the River Cottage HQ, wasn't there, when you were managing the place?
Yeah. So the River Cottage, the location that you and I are talking about now, is perhaps the second incarnation of a River Cottage HQ, the place where people can come and learn. It's a small holding. It's about 100 acres. It's organic. It has a wonderful 16th century farmhouse in the middle of the land, and now this is a place where people can go and dine. It's a classroom, it's a meeting room, and we have a barn and a cookery school as well. But for about just shy of 3 years, I lived in the farmhouse, with my now wife, Ellie, and lived and worked in the same place, Francis. It offers up some very peculiar circumstances. There's no on or off, but it's right. A brilliant place to be. I wanted to see the seasons. I wanted to learn how to grow stuff. I wanted to get involved in the lambing. I wanted to kind of have a complete 360-degree involvement on the day-to-day. It felt as if it kind of gave my role there integrity.
Oh, very good. Well, it's a fabulous place to visit and a wonderful place to spend some time. And I've been lucky to be down there a couple of times, but well worth a visit down to the HQ. And really, it's about kind of celebrating those artisans that you were talking about and that lifestyle and just spreading the word. And I've any class I've ever met that were down there, whether I was a part of it or that I just met on one of the tours, everybody seemed very buzzed up, and you were spreading off ambassadors to help spread that ethos even further. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's got a certain energy. There's a spirit there, and you know, lots of the people who are involved have a passion for doing the right thing, and hardly any of it is done from a position of egotism. You know, and that's kind of rare in the world of food. And in particular, celebrity chefs. So it's a very balanced place to work.
Well, I've really enjoyed my time there. And I was over with you one time doing a butchery course and some smoking and curing in one of your classes there. And that's obviously what you're best known for. You're the smoking and curing expert at River Cottage. And that was the theme of your last book. And that's what we've had you teaching over at Crow and Cottages a couple of times.
Yeah.
But the most latest, or the latest book now, is all about cheese and dairy.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. I'm in danger of being now labelled as the cheese and ham guy from River Cottage.
Ham and cheese. Do some baking, and then we can get a great sandwich out of you. It's fantastic.
Exactly. You know, it's not a bad title. But you know where it came from, Francis. I've always enjoyed cheese. It's one of the first things I remember. As a kid, you know, sitting in the garden in Manchester, I can remember distinctly this wedge of Cheshire cheese and the kind of sourness. And I even remember the kind of the touch of the waxy paper that it was wrapped in, very tactile. And food, of course, is massively connected to memories. But as a subject, it was something that I had to learn. I had to go and meet real, true artisan experts who were very generous with their time and their knowledge and managed to kind of make some successful cheeses. And it's the sort of the connection between the two subjects for me is this kind of invisible world, the interplay of the kind of minutiae of the bacteria and the microflora and the sorcery that happens with just a few ingredients.
And that journey has kind of led now to the publication of this new handbook, but it covers everything, not just the production of the cheese, everything from the ethics of dairy farming up to the varying types of milk. And then there's a real encouragement in the book for people to have a go themselves. So whether it's churning your own butter at home or making your own cheeses, you encourage people to kind of get stuck in.
I do. I mean, that comes from that sense of the artisan, where I think that if you can encourage individuals to have a go at making stuff, then they get an element of engagement and enjoyment and potentially control over their own food production. And I think via that process, you enjoy the products more. It's impossible to talk about cheese and dairy without actually touching on the ethics of the dairy industry, But I didn't want it to be heavy-handed. I wanted to just mark how it had changed and how actually, as a consumer, you can circumnavigate the worst aspects of that. You can still, as we did when we made some cheese at Crolan, you managed to get some wonderful raw milk, and we used that, and the results were fabulous. That's the sort of spirit, the pioneering spirit that I wanted to instill in people.
What I do like is your message that if you want to continue eat dairy, by all means do, but try to make a positive choice about the welfare scale and where you shop at and where you source the ingredients or where you source the food. And that could really be applied across all products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the principles of River Cottage. Not that we invented that, but, you know, it's a stance that you can take in any division or category of food. And with that in the back of your mind, you will always make a positive choice that will have a better effect on either the environment or animal welfare, or even the poor, lowly producer who's kind of living and breathing the subject.
And one of the things about having a go and getting stuck in, it's very like the message we often give people about growing their own veg. If you put a bit of effort into making something or growing something, not only will you enjoy it so much more when it comes time to eating it, but you have a greater respect for the people who make it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, food waste is a massive issue and something that we should all have both eyes on. But it's true, you know, there's a joy in connecting to the process as opposed... I mean, we could talk ourselves out of anything, really, couldn't we? But the processes are so simple. And there is an element of joy and engagement. And also, if you then kind of reduce your food waste because it's your stuff that you're making, you're more connected to it, then that's a brilliant byproduct of the whole process.
A lot of people get very afraid when it comes to making food, and, you know, cheese might be a bit scary as well. There's bacteria involved and there's processes that change things over time and something might go wrong. I really like the quote that I heard from you where you're talking about being the head of security at the best bacteria nightclub in town. So you only want the good lads to get in and keep the other gougers out.
Yeah.
I'm looking through the book here, and it's beautifully produced, Steve, and yours was the very first handbook that I ever read from cover to cover, the smoking and curing one. I love the way you write. Just like talking to you, very, very easygoing, and you can't help but take nuggets of information away from it. But there's everything in there from kind of the equipment that you need to make cheese, and very little, really. Right the way through to what ingredients to use, different types of cheese, and then there's some lovely recipes in there too.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things about working in food that you can have a personal voice. You know, you can talk about, mind you, during the editing process, Francis, I get lots of red ink comments from my sub-editor saying, you know, Steve, why do I want to know about your childhood when I'm learning how to make a strained yogurt cheese? And I think, well, yeah, fair enough. I do need to pare it back a little bit. But thanks for the compliment about the writing style. But they are instructional. You know, the idea is that it's meant to be encouragement. And people love to cook. And, you know, I don't expect every reader to create an 18-month mature Caerphilly-style hard cheese, even if they make a cheese wafer, but engage in making some of the recipes from cheese that they perhaps bought from a farmer's market or a direct from an artisan producer. I think that's just as valid.
Now, one of the recipes in the book is for labneh, and we've made labneh at courses out at Crowline Cottages. You introduced us to that, and it really is the simplest of things to do, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is, and I love it for that. It's, you know, a kind of full-fat natural yogurt, which can either be just drained over a period of time, or you can slightly agitate it with a little bit of salt to kind of increase the rate in which it dries. But you just get this lovely, tangy, sour, soft cheese at the end of a sort of overnight process. And that's good enough on its own, but you can chop some wonderful fresh herbs in there, some black pepper, some garlic. And we got the guests at Crowland just decorating it with stuff in little kilner jars, and most of them were going to give them as presents. And so, you know, it's a simple idea, but it's got a lot going on in it.
And it's absolutely gorgeous on a slice of sourdough bread toasted. And when you store it in the jar with a little of olive oil, the olive oil adds to the flavour as well. But I really love it. I remember when you showed me how to make it, and I fell in love with it so much, I thought we could create a Labna empire and make ourselves really rich.
Sorry, you were mental on Labna at the time.
I was talking Labna in here for weeks and weeks.
We haven't given up on that idea, have we?
No. And nobody else should try and make it. It's actually more complicated than Steve makes it sound.
It just requires a certain skill set that only you and I know.
Well, Steve, the book is really, really lovely, and I thoroughly recommend it to anybody to pick it up. And your sub-editor didn't succeed in taking all of the lovely little anecdotes that Steve adds in his books out, which is great, because I think it makes it easier to kind of connect with the person, and then easier to learn from them if you kind of trust that person and enjoy spending some time reading their words and enjoy spending some time with them. So Stephen Lamb of River Cottage fame, thank you very much for joining us today. And Cheese and Dairy by Stephen Lamb is available in the bookshops here in Kilkenny. It's around about 16 to 17 euro, depending on where you pick it up. And I would thoroughly recommend it. Stephen, thanks very much for joining us.
Francis and Max, thank you so much. Lovely to speak to you. When I'm next over, we'll sit down in a pub somewhere and I'll read chapters.
We might be able to sell tickets to that. Leave that one with me, Steve.
Brilliant.
Thanks again for joining us. Bye bye. It's a lovely book. Really, if you haven't got a copy yet, you should pick one up. It's beautiful photography in there, as there always is in the River Cottage handbooks.
Oh, yes, I must get a copy of it. I had a look at the recipes. It does look nice.
And there's more cheese in there that I'm going to try. So I've done the Labna that he recommended and one or two others, but there's some other cheeses in there now that I'm definitely going to have a go at making. It's kind of, he mentions at one point in the book where there's just a little bit of magic seems to happen when you're creating cheese.
I think with anything with bacteria or anything fermented, there is kind of a magic, isn't there?
Mm. Because it's not just like sticking the ingredients and stir them around in the bowl. There's a little bit of thyme is added as well. And then the end product, despite very little interventions of heat or anything like that, they're so very different to what you started out with.
And I'm sure it's very different in the time of the year, what milk you use as well.
Yeah, and of course, what he does say in there several times is that even if we're both making the same cheese and following the same recipe and using the same basic ingredients, if you do it in my place, it'll taste completely different to the one that you make in your place, because the yeasts and bacteria in the air are very local to our environment and they have an impact on the taste. So it's the most local of foods, and there's even a troubleshooting page in the book, which I think is fantastic in case anything goes wrong. It's very considerate of them to try and help you sort it out. Now we're going to take another ad break, and coming up after the break we're going to be talking to Breda Marr in Calooney Farm in Tipperary about their selection of cheeses, a wide range of cheeses, and all of them absolutely delicious. And we've a couple in the studio here that we're going to try while we're talking to Breda. We'll be back just after these.
Email us on studio at communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the artisan food retailers of Kilkenny.
And welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. And so you can send in any questions or comments by text to 086-353-7782 or email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, we're delighted to be joined on the phone by Breda Marr from Cooleeney Farm in near Turles in County Tipperary. Breda, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
Now, I believe you know my co-presenter here, Mags, not too far from you, where she grew up in Turles, County Tipperary.
Yes, indeed, another Tipperary lady. Good evening, Mags.
Hi, how are you? I think we're related, aren't we?
Are we?
My father always maintained we were anyway. I don't know.
Yes, your dad and my husband would know one another very well. I think they're involved in a lot of farming activities and
yes,
yeah, the mart and all those kind of things.
Yours was the first cheese, the first artisan cheese we would have had at home back in the 80s, I suppose, mid-80s, was it, or early 80s, I'm not sure. That was my first introduction to anything other than cheddar, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's an easy one, I suppose, to acquire a taste for. The Coolini is quite an easy one for people.
Yours is the fourth generation of the Maher family working the land on the Coolini, isn't it?
No, not the fourth generation of cheesemaking, but Pat's son is the fourth generation, the Mahers. He looks after the dairy herd and looks after the milk supply for the cheese. The cheese was established in 86, basically to add a little bit of value to what Jim and myself were doing at the time.
Mm.
It was the introduction time of the introduction of milk coaters and a lot of electricity strikes and things like that, so we felt we needed to do something to be a little bit more solid than what we were trying to do ourselves.
Well, you were one of the first, then, I'd imagine, of the kind of artisan cheese producers in Ireland. We're looking at if there's a wide range of cheeses available, but back then there weren't that many on the market.
I think I probably would have been the more or less the end of the first phase of them.
Mm.
I mean, the whole industry really began down in West Cork, and was, you know, the founder really was Veronica Steele, who sadly has now passed away, who produced the Malines cheese.
Mm.
Then you had the Gabin and the Ardrahan and Duras and all the washed rind cheese. They're all based really down in West Cork, and Veronica was the lady who taught all of those people how to make cheese. Then we in Tipperary gathered a little memento later on in life, and Cashel Blue would have been about, I think, about 3 years ahead of us or 4 years ahead of us in production when Jane developed the lovely blue cheese, nice creamy blue cheese. So we got the bug around 1986, and fortunately we still have that bug.
And a wide range of products now, like it's not just Coolini farmhouse cheese, there's baking Coolini, Dumbarra, Daru, Man, like all the cow's milk cheeses, and then there's also some goat's milk cheeses too.
That's right, yeah, we buy our goat's milk from local goat farmers here beside us, and yeah, I suppose, you know, innovation really is what you've got to be all about nowadays, and you've got to be adding something new to the range. And I think probably as a food producer myself, apart from cheese and before cheese, you know, it's lovely to be developing something new and to be putting a new little twist or a new tweak on what you're doing. So that end of things I love. So we have a lovely, really, really nice new at the moment. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It's Ruby, and we do it in conjunction with our local microbrewery in Templemore, Coolon from White Gypsy.
Mags was actually mentioning that one earlier on. She had some at the weekend. It's not one of the two that you've brought in today, though, Mags, is it?
No, I'm afraid it's not.
Mags has just handed me a lovely piece of cheese here.
That's the original Coolini, that one. I also have the Gert Nimona. The Gert Nimona is my favourite, actually. It's a very nice, mild goat's cheese, but that's lovely. Isn't it? You've had that many times.
I have. I'm a huge fan of this. It's really, really, really nice. And I probably shouldn't have shoved a big lump of it into my mouth while I'm trying to interview Breida here, but it's very
that's
tasty.
That's okay. We're quite happy. That's what you're having in your mouth. That's really good.
It was just too tempting in front of me, Breida. I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, the Gartamona is good. It's a nice cheese. But you must get yourself a Ruby someday. Now, it's very, very small production at the moment. But it's really to die for.
And what's different about the production there, and how is the beer used in that one, Breida?
We wash the cheese at a certain stage in production.
Mm-hmm.
We wash the cheese in the beer, and basically we don't want to get a really beery taste from the cheese. We want to introduce some of the yeast from the from the beer into the cheese, and that's what will give you the flavors. You know, when you combine those with the milk and the curds of the cheese, you get a great old flavour there. And it's just something different. It's something nice. People who like something that's a bit stronger than your Coolini will like this. We had it at a marketplace last week, on Thursday of last week, and it was the one that stole the show there for us.
And this was this the showcase of Irish products for international buyers?
Yeah.
In the RDS last week?
Yeah, super day put on by Bord Beer.
Mm-hmm.
I would just have to say, take your hats off to them. They just did a fantastic job. It was brilliant.
Some of the numbers I heard from that in terms of the buying power of the buyers who were present, it was into the billions, I think, wasn't it, annually?
No, absolutely brilliant. But for us, as small cheesemakers, you're not looking for the buying power that, you know, Glanbury are looking for. But, you know, it's not nice to get some interesting export customers.
Mm-hmm. And are you selling abroad at the moment?
Oh yeah, we're about 50% export.
And where would your big market abroad be?
You know, Europe's growing for us. We've been working quite hard in Europe at the moment. America, we do some into Asia, Dubai, Singapore, Hong Kong. And we had all those people from Asia visit the farm here last Tuesday ahead of Marketplace, and that was really nice.
I think my sister was on that tour, wasn't she?
Excellent. I'm just back from a little time in Lyon, and even though the French are very, very proud of their own produce and their own fromage, it was nice for me to see that on some of the cheese boards they were actually selling Irish cheeses, and they were selling them at a premium, like this was something to be desired and to be appreciated. And some of the seafood as well, so the likes of oysters and so on. So Ireland has long had a reputation for being a green and pleasant land and producing some good food, but finally we're starting to leverage that to actually sell abroad.
Yeah, no, it is coming eventually, and you know, France is actually one of the leaders there. With Camembert and Brie cheese, it'll be more challenging for us. Mm. We do have a customer in France who takes a distributor in France who takes our cheese. It is coming, it's growing, and you know, we even had a meeting last week with one of the French distributors who requested a meeting with us. So even if we went nowhere, it was a huge honour to have a French distributor request a meeting.
Absolutely, yeah, because they are, like I said, they're very proud of their own produce, and it has to be, so you know, but at the same time they don't want to preclude something that has a unique taste or is superior quality. They love their food, and all they ever talk about is their food, so if it's really, really good and it compares well to theirs, they will let you in.
They're great.
And are you still hands-on, Breida, in the making of the cheese down in Killeen?
Not so much hands-on in the making of the cheese. We'll be hands-on in the running of the business, okay, mm-hmm. but not so much hands-on in the making of the cheese. It's nice to take a little step there every now and then, but no, we have three very good cheesemakers there now, and they look after all production. We have another guy who looks after the maturing of the cheeses, and yeah, no, the team in Killeen is excellent, lovely young team, and they're fantastic, really.
And all of the milk for the cow's milk cheeses, that all comes from your own farm?
It does, and we also buy from just a local farm here right close to us, next door neighbour.
So it's all very, very locally sourced?
Yeah, it has to be locally sourced. I mean, there will be a limit to the amount of milk our own farm is, you know, mm-hmm. capable of producing. So I think we've very much reached that capacity now at this stage. So we have a local lovely young guy next door who has a rather large herd, and we're buying milk from him.
Superb. Well, Brie, I have to say I'm a big fan of the products. I always have been. Mags is just about to hand me another lump of cheese.
That's the ghost cheese.
It's absolutely lovely.
She's looking after your calcium.
It really is. It's a fabulous product. Now, she didn't bring me in any crackers or any of her toasted sourdough bread, so I've got cheese all over my fingers now, Brie.
Can lick them.
It's really lovely. And the website is culleeny.com, culleeny.com.
That's correct.
Lots of details there about the range of cheeses. And widely available, Breida, aren't they?
Oh, they're pretty widely available. We also own brand for all the main chains in Ireland. So you'll get them under our own brand, and you'll also get them under the specially selected. You'll get them under Simply Better, Signature Taste, all of those brands.
Very good. Well, continued success to you, Breida, and everybody down on Killeeny Farmer. Thanks very much for joining us on the line today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now, that really is good stuff, that cheese.
It
really is lovely. And a lovely family story as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And out of a need, really. In 1986, things weren't going particularly well. They took a chance, diversified, made a bit of an investment, and it's working for them.
Working really well, like they're everywhere. And actually, when I went buying this, some of that is the Super Value or own brand, and then you can buy theirs as well and that. But you'll still find them like in the supermarkets and in good cheesemongers as well. Mm. I will get some of the beer cheese. I should have brought some
that
home
sounds
with me on
lovely.
It is, yeah. Yeah,
I'd say limited production on that. You might have to go to Tipperary
to
pick it
up. Yeah, but I'll get it in Tipperary the next time. So I'll give you some of that. Can I give you a nice recipe for the?
Oh, please do. Yeah.
For the original Killeeny, the Brie. Make it like a sandwich. So put some ham or a schweizer or something, some of your cheese, some pickle and some relish, in sourdough bread, or you can use regular bread too, and then put it onto the pan. I've done this before and stuff. But it's brilliant with the coulini, actually. Put onto the pan with a little bit of butter and stuff and have a cooked sandwich.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, if you had some focaccia, you could just...
Cook the focaccia sandwich. Oh, yes.
Focaccia sandwich with melting brie from Tipperary.
I'm absolutely starving now. Okay. I want some more of that cheese.
Well, you
as
have
well.
Cheese and pesto.
But no bread to smear it on. No,
sorry about the bread.
We'll have to struggle with it. Tipperary producers seem to be kind of upping their game, really, don't they, in terms of banding together?
They really have, actually. And they really seem to be, you know, and I'm only on the edge of it, but I know a lot of them just... But they've really come together and stuff, and they support each other, and they all seem to be promoting each other too. Mm. So like the dinner I was at on Saturday night, it was all local food, local beer, local cheese, local meat. The eggs used in the dessert were from Magner's Farm. Mm. The apples were from Tipperary, everything. And it was really nice to see kind of a whole 5-course meal produced locally. And an exceptionally beautiful meal too.
In Kilkenny, we've been very, very lucky with the producers that we've had, and they were very innovative and really kind of ahead of the posse for the most part, and maybe just a little bit behind West Cork, which kind of was the starting place for a lot of the food revolutions in Ireland, the small producers. But I hope we're not sitting on our laurels and kind of letting others catch up and overtake us.
Well, Tipperary are definitely ahead, I think, particularly on working together. They've had Tipperary Food, I can't remember the name of it actually, but they've had kind of a support group set up for years and years. Mm. And it's everything from cheese to jams and chutneys, butchery. So yeah, they seem to be very good to work together actually. An awful lot of women involved.
Yeah, well, as is often the case, you know, innovation around the farm or in a small company often comes that way. We might have somebody in from Taste Kilkenny, that cooperative group here in Kilkenny, and see what it is that they're doing at the moment. Because maybe they are working hard just promoting Kilkenny outside Kilkenny, and we're missing a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think they have done some things, but I think Tipperary are just a bit of a head. I think they've taken kind of inspiration from what they've done in Tipperary, so that's good. I'm kind of happy with that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, fair play to them, and well done on and continued success to everybody at Kilkenny and the other producers. Now, we're running out of time again, as we often do, but we better mention some things to do in the garden this week. When spring finally arrives, we're going to have to do a whole show on the garden to help people catch up.
I think we do, actually, yeah.
Because it just hasn't felt right to give too many jobs to people at the end of each of the shows. And the weather's just been so miserable. And it's been impossible to get to the ground in most cases. I know Tongi some weeks ago was telling us that his buds were in, but in most cases the ground is just too wet.
Well, I was in the hardware shop in Thomastown the other day, and he's got a pile of seed potatoes piled up, and he said they'd normally be gone around Paddy's Day. He can't sell them because people are not planting them.
Yeah, well, I have seed potatoes to sell as well, and like that, they'd normally all be gone in March. I sell the last of whatever I haven't used myself. I haven't even advertised them because I know nobody will be looking for the ad, because nobody will be looking to do any planting.
Well, I finally finished planting my hedge, actually, which I've been doing for months and months. It's now in, but like in the middle of April seems a bit mad.
Well, beech right the way up until now, because it's very, very slow to get going.
It was white corn, actually, but even still. Yeah.
Well, the ground is wet. It's not going to dry out. It'll have roots established in no time. So fingers crossed it should survive. But now that there is finally a little bit of pickup in the weather, and hopefully with the longer days and it's bright till 9 o'clock now, the drying will be good and the ground will get drier that much quicker. We'll start to focus on more things to do in the garden. But really, one of the things that's most important at the moment is to stay on top of the weeds. So if you can get near the soil at all, try and stay on top of the weeds and continue to pick off the seed heads on daffodils or any of the other bulbs that are still flowering about the place. And that will prevent the plant putting too much effort into creating seeds and allow it to store more of its energy in the bulb to produce a better plant next year. As we say every week, and we'll continue to say, I think, for a while, feed the birds.
They're still starving. I've spent more money on bird food this year than ever.
It is shocking when you fill the feeders how quickly they descend upon it. And one thing I saw this week that you don't normally see, because fighting among birds, very, you know, wasteful of energy. It uses up an awful lot of energy. But I actually saw a chaffinch and a blue tit have a go at each other. When I topped up the feeders, they wanted to get to it, so they were obviously hungry if they're doing that.
Who won that one?
The chaffinch, actually, yeah.
It's bigger.
Yeah, a bigger bird. But the blue tit had a go, you know?
They're quite feisty, the little blue tits, actually, yeah.
Very fast. Like, it was over in seconds, but I'm sure it meant an awful lot to them. Yeah.
I love to see the kind of the hierarchy, though, with the feeder. Mm. Like, you'll have the sparrows just are on the ground. The goldfinches at the moment seem to be kind of winning, but sparrows never get anywhere unless there's nobody else around, but they're just on the ground. They're taking whatever's left.
During a recent visit to Lyon, I was sitting outside a lovely boulangerie one day having a little pastry and some...
This was during work time, wasn't it?
Yes, during work. It was one of the very few breaks I had. But a little sparrow came and sat on the edge of the table and I thought he'd hardly take a crumb out of my hands. And I held out the hand and he took it from me. And then I was turning around to the man I was with at the time. I was telling him how lovely this was. And when I turned back, he was trying to rob my whole sandwich. So that was the end of... That was the end of feeding him.
So I think he might have done it before, is that it?
I don't think I was the first person that he took a crumb from. A few other things to do then in the garden. So tie in any of your climbing and rambling roses, and tie in any of those raspberry canes which were left, which will produce fruit later in the year, and prevent them blowing about a bit. And now I know this is a job that a lot of people do, but I have so many fruit trees out at Croahan, it's just simply impossible for me. But if you have a small fruit tree and you want to make sure you get a fruit from it, you should really protect that tree from frost. So if your fruit tree is in flower, you know, a small apple tree in a pot or whatever, and there's very few flowers on it, in the evening, if there's frost expected, just throw a very, very light fleece over the tree, and that will protect the buds and the flowers from frost. Because the last thing you want is the flower to come out to be pollinated, your nascent fruit is there ready to go, and then frost hits that night and the whole thing drops off the tree, and that's the end of your crop. So bear that in mind if there's frost forecast, and maybe protect a small tree if you can. And then start to feed citrus plants if you have them in the greenhouse or in the conservatory. They're very, very hungry, and they'll need more water and some food from now to the end of the season. Well, anything else that you'd like to add to that list, Max?
No, I actually have a load on cut flower patch. That's one of my things. But
well, we can cut the music a little bit short if you want to talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, if we've time, let's do it. Because last year was the first year I did it, so I'm going to do sort of something a bit better this year, even though it worked quite well last year, and it's a really nice, just a nice thing to do. And it's kind of the guilt-free way of filling your vase for the summer. So you don't need very much ground either. And my motivation for doing it in kind of the vegetable patch was so that the hens couldn't destroy flowers, which they do all the time, and the geese just bite the tops off flowers just for the crack. So I just set aside a little area, and last year I did sweet pea, calendula, corn flowers, nasturtium, and there was another red flower that I just don't know the name of, and it worked really well. I was really pleased with it. Not perfect, but well. So this year I'm going to add a few more things. I've just ordered some seeds, actually, so I'm going to add some poppy, nigella, Love in a Mist it's called. Mm. Beautiful little blue flower, quite easy to grow apparently.
Nigella is a beautiful flower. Yeah. It looks so, so delicate, really striking flower.
And it's a beautiful blue colour, actually. Mm. So I'm going to try that, and some borage. So I'm going to add that to my little mix. But you can put in all sorts of other things, like...
Carnations. Never grow carnations.
I have, actually, yes. Yes, you like carnations,
I have a real
you?
Soft spot for carnations, for that kind of like cut at home, because they're such a giving plant, and when you cut they're very easy to grow, and when you cut the carnation it lasts for ages and ages. Yes, and ages. Yeah. But my soft spot for carnations developed when I was a child, and I bought some carnations for my mother, and a week later, 10 days later, the carnations were still in the vase in the house, and I remember thinking, this is great value.
Yeah, they because last, yeah.
I bought her some daffodils a year before or whatever, and for Mother's Day I presume, and they only lasted a couple of days. So from then on, carnations were
every year.
Yep, that's it.
Well, other ones you can use, actually, hollyhock, sweet william, sunflowers, snapdragons, or dahlias. Actually, I'm putting down some dahlias as well. I have some dahlia bulbs to put down. Or you can add some perennials, like peonies or Japanese anemones.
Oh yeah,
I know. Oh, do you like those? Mm. Yeah, I have a lot of those. They take no care really, so they're good ones. And another nice flower is Astrantia, which is it's a little blue kind of decorative flower. Well, there's actually lots of different colours and stuff, kind of 8 to 9 varieties, and you get an awful lot of flowers on one plant. So if you're looking for kind of any assistance, there's a website called flowerfarmersofireland.com.
flowerfarmersofireland.com,
yeah, and they have a list of flower farmers, obviously, which I would love to be, but I'm not. Where you can do courses, you know, you can do a kind of a day-long course. I know there's one in Leitrim anyway. But you don't need to do a course, to be honest. Last year I was really organised and I planted my sweet peas in the autumn and then had them ready. I haven't done that this year, so I can plant the seeds now, but they'll be for next year's flowers. But I might just buy some plants this year.
Well, that's what I was just about to suggest, because there is still time if you're getting going now and you're feeling a little behind and maybe you haven't started any of your seeds when really you should have. If you pop along to the garden centre, any of the garden centres here in Kilkenny, there are lots and lots of starter packs.
Lots of them.
And seedlings.
Vegetables too,
and vegetables too, that you can pick up and get them into the ground. And that kind of gives you a little bit of a head start.
Yeah.
But get them this week, because I'm fairly sure that a lot of people will be thinking the same thing once the weather, if it holds, and a lot of people will be going out and buying those, so they do tend to run out of stock. Right, well, we really are out of time now, so get going in the garden if you can. And we'll be back next week. I hope you enjoyed the show. And remember, it's repeated on Monday from 4 to 5 here on Community Radio Kilkenny City. And during the week, you can keep in touch with us by email to kitchengarden@ckc.ie. Or I'm on Twitter @NesbittF. And Mags is on Twitter @MagsMorrissey. And we'll be back next week. We're going to leave you now with Crow. And I thought this song very, very appropriate. It's called Cottage Cheese.
I'll lead you by the hand, my love, and take you to the top. By morning you'll say, forget the clock, and do it to me once again. Once again, it's time for us to part.